Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Floor on Friday, the 20th of November, recording at 8:36 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes, but first, let's have a quick review of what's happened this week. In terms of stock markets, for the most part, we've seen them treading a little bit of water this week, a pause, in other words, a little bit of ranging activity. But it's a pause following some strength, which had led to retests of the October, or tests of the October highs, rather, for a number of indices, including those on Wall Street. Overall, the performance has been quiet, but steadily so. And today we had a little bit more selling pressure, as we'd also seen yesterday in some of the Asian markets and also European markets. Wall Street, as I speak, is pretty well unchanged, having been down most of the day. Okay, long-dated government bonds, they've been firm, although there's a tiny bit of profit-taking in U.S. contracts today. The U.S. dollar has been steadier over the last week, and the U.S. dollar index, as I speak, is at 75.640. The precious metals have arguably been in a consolidation phase here this week, following their strong recent gains, which were led by gold. We saw some selling earlier today, pushing silver, for instance, down close to that $18 breakout point, but it's bounced right back up and shows a small gain on the day at 1851 currently. At gold, it looks like gold's heading for a new closing high, at least here today, currently 11.50 and 50 cents. That's up nearly $6. And the soybean market has bounced back among the soft commodities. Well, why did I jump to soft commodities? Well, I'll stick with the softs. Basically, steady action here for the most part. Soybeans on some crop concerns, but going back to the industrial sector, the industrial metals are quietly steady. Copper has come back after a setback earlier in the week, and it's currently at 314.45 on the first month position. And copper had broken out to the upside this week, so impressive action. Aluminium, lead, zinc are all pretty steady in here. Nickel a little bit weaker. Crude oil has fallen back from that $80 level once again. It's down again today, and currently trading at 76.72. Okay, what's going on here overall here in terms of the big picture? Well, this is unequivocally, in my view, a bull market for global stock markets. Now, a lot of people have been very concerned, understandably, about, well, first there were the depression and then worst recession since the depression fears. Then there was considerable concern over corporate profits. There was considerable concern over bank lending. In other words, banks were not lending, and there wasn't much credit available. And considerable concern over unemployment figures, which have risen significantly in most countries over the last year. So it's quite understandable that investors are going to be concerned about that, and I would not regard any of that. I would not be flippant about any of that data. But, and this is a very big but, central banks have produced record liquidity, and they have been A, determined first to avoid a repeat of the depression, and then they have been determined when that looked less likely, and it's fuller money certainly never felt that we were going to see that because you could see what the central banks were doing. And then they were determined to avoid the Japan situation of pushing on a piece of string, to quote Keynes, in terms of monetary policy. So what have we seen? Well, just the most dramatic, aggressive monetary reflation in the history of the planet, and there's no hyperbole in that description. And it's included plenty of quantitative easing that still goes on in a number of countries, including the United States and the United Kingdom. Now, a mantra at Fuller Money is that monetary policy trumps most other factors most of the time, and record-breaking monetary stimulus is going to do that in spades, and that's what has fueled the bull market. And the seeming paradox is the fact that unemployment has been rising in so many countries, and the fact that banks have really not been lending. One of the reasons of that being, of course, that they needed to recapitalize because they were carrying so many dubious, not to say bad, debts. Therefore, central banks have been recapitalizing the commercial banks through the yield curve. First, they loan them tons of money to improve their balance sheets, and then they've allowed them to borrow from the federal funds window and then invest that money in long-dated government bonds on a leveraged basis, knowing full well that Washington and the Bank of England were there buying up the lion's share, over 50%, and sometimes considerably over 50%, of the bonds on offer. And not surprisingly, some big institutional investors, from PIMCO to hedge funds, have jumped on that bandwagon as well, saying, well, we've got the central bank on our side, so that certainly has strictly limited losses, and we ought to be able to make some gain on the upside as well. And they've been right, although those gains have been modest in the long-dated government bonds, relative to what we have seen in stock markets. But if people have leveraged up substantially in those markets, it's good money, good profits nonetheless. Then, of course, we have had the boom in commodity markets. Now, one of the reasons this has been so strong, well, there are a number of reasons why this has been so strong. One is that supply has been hit by the fact that miners, for instance, oil producers, became much more conservative, particularly the miners. And they are mostly private companies. They found that that credit was less available. In other words, they were not able to to borrow the way they had a couple of years ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago. So that deterred them, and also they were as concerned as everyone else about the possibility of a global depression, or at least a severe recession. And so they postponed a number of brownfield, let alone greenfield sites, and just cut back production generally in response to the sharp drop in metal prices last year. So that's curbed the supply. And then, lo and behold, the worst recession since the Depression, I should put inverted commas around that, only applied to some countries. Other countries, like China, sailed through it with a growth slowdown. And people say, well, yes, wait a minute, China would have gone into recession if they hadn't had a massive financial stimulus. Well, look, what do central banks do when they are threatened with recession? And they tend to stimulate the money supply. It's just what they should do. It's textbook stuff. And the bottom line is that China's growth remains very strong. And this is also true for most of the Asian countries and India. So it wasn't a global recession at all. And much of this monetary stimulus continues. So China, leading the demand for commodities among the progressing world, has been a voracious buyer. And all that creation of fiat currency has stimulated investor demand, not least for gold and other precious metals. And that is something that I don't think is going to go away all that quickly. So my feeling really is that we have the world record accommodative monetary policy that is only likely to change very, very slowly. In other words, as central banks, which will not all act in unison, but as they begin to draw down on some of that by raising short-term interest rates a wee bit, selling some bonds, pulling some of the money out of circulation, they are certainly doing so gradually, and it's likely that they will continue to do so gradually. And we're talking about the stronger economies. Some of the weaker economies, such as the US and the UK, may well go on stimulating or providing this record monetary stimulus for a good many more months yet. So this remains a very favorable environment. Short-term interest rates are extremely low, despite a few very minor hikes we've seen in Australia, for instance, 50 basis points, but they're still much, much lower than any 10-year average of short-term interest rates. So that's a favorable background. And companies, meanwhile, have improved their profits through some dramatic productivity increases, mostly achieved through layoffs. But they've done everything in their capacity, going into survival mode last year, to run a leaner, tighter ship. And now demand is picking up somewhat. So you net it all out, and this is a very favorable environment still for global stock markets and also for commodity markets, which have led the charge. And it's a Fuller Money view that there's quite a good possibility that as bubbles occur, and in the dismal science of bubbleology, people tend to, or there's some people who look at any market that's shown a decent performance and call it a bubble, and they're particularly inclined to do that if they haven't participated in it or didn't forecast it. In my view, there really aren't any bubbles out there. Okay, there's some overheating in Hong Kong property prices, and also some in some of the urban areas in mainland China. But, you know, that's pretty much it. And to call this a serious bubble environment, I think, is a gross exaggeration. People are saying that commodities are a bubble, and citing gold. Well, you know, you look at inflation-adjusted charts on gold, and a lot of people will counter that, you know, this is still relatively cheap, and that gold is being re-evaluated, not as just a pretty commodity, but as hard money, which it's been throughout the history of mankind. And central banks have been interested in buying gold, as well as you know. So, again, this is an impressive environment for both equities and for commodities. Now, inevitably, trends don't move in straight lines. We get lots of little reactions. We get occasional corrections. We see some reversions to the mean. In terms of global equities, we have seen a corrective phase, predictably, as stock markets moved through the anniversary of last year's meltdown. And they had become a little bit overextended prior to that, in with September's gains, and therefore were susceptible to some reactive ranging mean reversion, and we have seen that. And some markets will see a little bit more of that than others. The strongest markets, really fuller money themes, we're talking about now China led Asia. China is not the top performing Asian stock market. I think that must be Indonesia, but China in terms of being the engine for Asia for sure. Also, the Latin American stock markets, of which Brazil is by far the biggest, but very, very strong stock market performances there overall. But all have seen some consolidation recently, and we are moving beyond the anniversary of last year's meltdown, and also beyond the sometimes jittery October period, into what's a seasonally favorable environment in the run-up to year-end and heading towards the first quarter. So I do expect to see further gains here in stock markets and in most commodity markets, and I would concentrate my interest in those sectors. Now, what about the canaries in the coal mine? And excuse me. In terms of things that could go wrong, what could go bump in the night? And I have cited among factors to watch long-dated government bond yields. We don't want to see a spike in those. Well, that's hardly going to happen while all this quantitative easing is going on. And so the bond market environment, largely one long-dated government bond market prices or yields, largely a ranging environment, is quite benign as far as the bull runs in commodities and stock markets is concerned. I've also talked about the US dollar, and what we don't want to see is a collapse in the US dollar, and I don't think we will. I don't think other central banks or the US can afford to let the dollar collapse, but they may not have to try very hard to prevent it from collapsing. Because really, with all of these fiat currencies, it's a question of which is least bad overall, or put another way, which countries need a weaker currency more than others. And the US, with its economic problems, and certainly Britain, needed a weaker currency more than most, and the US had seen its dollar driven higher during the worst part of last year's meltdown, as carry trades were unwound, and as Americans brought their overseas investments home. A lot of American investors, you know, pulling money out of emerging markets, so I'm bringing that home. And then some, rather naively, on the basis that the dollar was a safe haven. Well, yes, in the days of yesteryear, but not in this environment. But the dollar, what's the dollar done? It's dropped down to, in US dollar index terms, is not all that far above the upper side of its base formation that formed, I think it was between June and August of last year, but in August of last year we had the upside breakout and the strong run as the stock market went into meltdown mode. So, you know, we're not down at new lows for the US dollar, The decline has been orderly, and a little bit of jawboning has helped to stem that decline quite recently. So again, I would regard that as a benign environment, and just about everybody realizes, as I said before, I think that the U.S. does need that softish currency more than most. So in terms of the first two potential canaries in the coal mine, they're still chirping happily away, not lying on their backs, eyes closed, feet up in the air, in a state of mortification. Again, a benign environment. Now, the third one, crude oil. This is the one that worries me the most, because crude oil is in recovery mode, but it's been a slow relative to what we've seen, for instance, in gold and some other commodities. Now, including silver. Now, my feeling is that crude oil will range higher over time. I don't know how quickly. My hunch is that it will be slower than for many other commodities. And one of the reasons for that is, first, we have some ex supply floating around in tankers because demand did drop off quite sharply during the worst of the global slowdown. And also, we've had the very necessary push, and it's a subsidized push, often into various renewables, the buildup of nuclear power, the wind power, solar power is gaining. So, although the developments in these fields are still quite small, very small relative to the demand for oil and also coal, I should add. Nonetheless, they continue, and I'm just going to take a little drink of water and have a half cough, excuse me. I'd never make an opera singer, would I? So, where were we? Point is that the increase in all these other sources of energy, while it's not hugely significant in percentage terms, it's enough at the margins during what has been an economic slowdown to keep crude oil and the various petroleum products, gasoline, heating oil, from running riot on the upside. Now, the danger is that as the global economy picks up, and it will pick up next year, in my view, the danger is that the demand for crude oil and also coal starts to rise faster than the incoming alternative forms of energy, including nuclear and the renewables and the wind and the solar. I'm sorry, those are renewables, the wind and the solar. I meant in terms of biofuels and so on. But the danger is that the demand for crude oil rises faster than the increase in supply from these various alternative forms of energy, and that leads to some sort of spike. Now, I think we'll get a spike at some stage, but I don't know when, and I'm hopeful, and it's not just fingers crossed type of hope. I'm hopeful that we'll get a more moderate rise, and therefore we will avoid a spike in the price of crude oil anytime soon. More importantly, the charts will tell us. And if you watch any chart as an indicator for the global economy, keep your eye on that crude oil. Spikes in the price of crude have always caused global recessions. We saw that in 2008, and the next spike will be no exception to that. But go back to the canaries in the coal mine, they are chirping happily away. None of them are causing problems. So this remains a benign environment, a tailwind, if you like, for global stock markets and most commodity prices. So that's the good news. Could anything else go wrong that I've overlooked? Well, there could always be a geopolitical event, the wild card, black swan item. And without joining Paranoids Anonymous, you know, we could craft various different scripts, but I don't see anything as being a serious immediate threat. If something tips up, we will certainly see it right away and hopefully be able to assess it analytically. So, but you net it all out, and we still have ongoing bull markets. Now, I think I've run on for quite a while here, so I'd better do a wrap and just say I hope you have a splendid weekend. Meanwhile, all the best to all of you.